You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very warm welcome along to the latest edition of the William Hill Golf Podcast. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall in situ, ready for the 2018 Ryder Cup. We'll spin you through the betting very, very shortly. Looking forward to this one. Dave Tindall alongside me. Dave, first of all, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Well, technically, I'm fighting man flu. So if I sound a bit like Thorbjørn Olesen on 40 a day, that's why.
Yeah, you do sound a little bit croaky over there in the corner. Hopefully, we'll be able to get through this podcast then. And usually, I dive straight into the Ryder Cup because it's such a big event. But we can't ignore what happened last week at Eastlake with Tiger Woods winning for the first time in 5 years. I'm not sure I've ever seen scenes like that on Sunday on 18.
It was astonishing, wasn't it? It was like the crowd were sort of extras in a film, and it was this fantastical film that you think, nah, that's silly, but it happened. And yeah, we knew it'd be good when he won again, but it was even better than that, wasn't it?
It was like he strangled the life out of the event as well. It was like Woods of yesteryear, the way he just positioned himself on Sunday. And he was always going to shoot around about level par. And he said to the rest of the field, come and catch me if you can. And they all withered and faltered fell away.
It was like the old Tiger effect, wasn't it? When they see him going to win his race and they just fall apart, trying to chase him in vain. And it played out again. And you would have thought, McIlroy and Rose, no, they're not going to. They've won so much since he last won. And yet they did, like it was, you know, the early 2000s again.
It was an incredible, incredible performance. To do what he's done in the space of 12 months after having 4 back surgeries, the very public breakdown of his marriage after the infidelity, the mugshot, after the DUI. And about 18 months ago, he wasn't able to move after hitting a chip shot in his back garden, and his daughter had to rescue him. It's just been the most incredible and fantastical comeback.
I'm sure we've said on here that he won't win again, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so. Most people have said that he won't win again, especially a major championship, but now...
But we were basing that on sort of health reports, weren't
we? And we were basing it on the words of Tiger Woods as well. I think he said to Nick Faldo at the Masters dinner 1 year that he was done. Mm. And to come back like he has is just put everything else to one side. It's the most incredible sporting comeback of my lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, golf was already in a good place, but now Tiger's back in there. Brilliant.
What about the overall race for the FedEx Cup and that $10 million? Justin Rose won the $10 million. There's been a lot of talk about next year and how that's going to destroy the Tour Championship. But there's something not quite right about someone winning $10 million and lagging a putt for a 3-over par round in the final round and then punching the air with joy. It's just, there's something not quite right about that.
Yeah. Well, do you think there's something right about next year then?
No, I don't.
What do you do?
I have no idea. I've not got the answer. I think some sort of match play event for the final event where it's structured, seeded, based on position going into the final event of the season in terms of the FedEx Cup race is maybe the right way of doing it. I don't think next year is the right way. I don't think this year was the right way either. Do we need the FedEx Cup, I suppose, is the next question.
And they're obviously trying to recreate sort of post-seasons in the US sports, aren't they? But maybe the head-to-head element is better then. Mm.
Okay, enough of that. Let's get on to the Ryder Cup, the big one this week. Starts on Friday from France. Le Golf National is the destination, the host course for this year's Ryder Cup. Europe are 5-4. The tie is 12-1. The United States are 4-5. Let's start by talking about the history of this event. Most recent history was the USA routing Team Europe at Hazeltine 2 years ago. That came on the back of 3 straight defeats for Team USA. And they haven't won on European soil since they beat Team Europe at the Belfry way back in 1993. And it had been, prior to that performance at Hazeltine, a fractured team, one that didn't seem to gel quite as well as the Europeans. But we definitely saw a change in focus under Davis Love 2 years ago. And I think it was basically a team that were just fed up of being beaten, coming together to win that Ryder Cup. And they started by going 4-0 in the morning foursomes. That built the solid foundations, and Europe failed to bridge the deficit thereafter.
Yeah, I mean, you could look at it, this home and away idea. They won on home soil in 2008. They absolutely should have won in 2012. The miracle of Medina, you know, you play that out again 20 times, they're winning 18 of those.
Yeah.
And they did win again on home soil. So rather than maybe saying they were a fractured bunch and they weren't as together, on home soil, they are good. It's just that Europe sort of got a win, a cheeky win in there in 2012. So home and away is a... Because obviously one of the big things about playing at home is you can set up the course how you want it. So that's a massive advantage, isn't it?
Yep.
So we were talking off air how I think we both of us liked the USA a while ago, but now we're not sure anymore.
I think that's got to do with the tailing off of a few of the key personnel in the US side in terms of form. You look back through to the Tour Championship last week, and four of their team, Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed, Bubba Watson and Phil Mickelson, finished in the last four spots in the Tour Championship. And this is something that you referenced on last week's podcast, Dave, that once maybe their winning chance had gone, in the preamble to last week's event, you said once that winning chance had gone, was there a possibility of some of the team members phoning it in, so to speak? And that could possibly have happened last week.
Yeah. That's a possibility, isn't it? Although there's still quite a few quid to play for, isn't there?
There's lots of money, but when they're not going to win events, do these top players need more money?
Yeah,
I suppose they want more money. But
someone like Koepka, didn't he shoot a second round 78 and then played well after that? So it wasn't like he then chucked. You know, I think he just had one bad round, and
that's fair comment.
But maybe it was hinted at, maybe him just going off the boil a little bit. It is a concern. Not so long back, you thought they were the form team, but maybe, you know, they're just peaking at the wrong time. They've peaked already, maybe.
Take form out of the way for just one moment. Is this the best US Ryder Cup team ever assembled? You've written a piece about the quality of the American side. The average world ranking is 11.
Yeah.
11 of the 12 players in the team are ranked inside the top 17. The only one that's not is Phil Mickelson, who's ranked at number 25, and he's a Ryder Cup stalwart who possibly will be hidden away by Jim Furyk these 3 days as well, because Mickelson on both sides is maybe the most out-of-form player.
Yeah, he might be sort of doing the drinks and keeping the ping-pong scores possibly for a couple of days. But yeah, this is where it becomes so difficult to pick the winner, because, as you say, the USA have got their strongest ever team on paper, ranking 11.16. The previous strongest USA team did go on to win.
Yeah.
But Europe in 2002 had an average world ranking of 52. And so how did they win that? But they won it by 3 points. So it can be misleading. But when the USA do have a strong team, they have won in the past. When Europe's average ranking this year is 19th, just over 19. The three times they've had an average ranking of under 20, they've won them all.
Yep.
So something's got to give, hasn't it? So it does suggest the strongest ever team from the USA versus a European team that wins with this kind of makeup.
Mm.
Let's just back the tie.
Well, the tie is available at 12-1, and I do think this is going to be a particularly tight Ryder Cup as well. I can't see either team romping away with it. The Americans appear to have a balanced side. They've got three rookies in the team, and those rookies have all had scintillating seasons. Justin Thomas should relish this competition, has had a look at the golf course as well. Tony Finau seems to never perform badly anymore, Tony Finau. And Bryson DeChambeau has won two of the four playoff events in the FedEx Cup as well. you balance that with Team Europe. Let's speak about the Europeans now. They are maybe slightly easier to pick holes in. They've got five rookies on the team. And Justin Rose, in the last Ryder Cup, was quite outspoken in the belief that Europe couldn't quite absorb that amount of rookies in Hazeltine. It might be easier for them to absorb five rookies on home soil.
Yeah, that, when you look at the stats, if you go away with a load of rookies, Rose actually said five was too many. It was actually six. He couldn't count. So six was far too many, and they got absolutely hammered 17-11. They had, in 1999, they had seven on the team, lost that as well. So, but for example, 2010... there were six European rookies, but at, on home soil. So that's the key. I mean, this, I was looking at, the USA have only got three rookies. In the last 10 Ryder Cups, there's only been three, well, the record of teams with three rookies or fewer is played five, won three, halved one, lost one. So if you've got a very small amount of rookies, it tends to go well for you.
Yeah, and that's where America have the edge. With only three rookies against Europeans and their five rookies. And Thomas Bjorn opted for experience over youth and even over form, maybe, in a couple of cases when selecting his captain's pick. He went with Paul Casey, Sergio Garcia, Ian Poulter and Henrik Stenson. They have 20 previous Ryder Cup appearances between them, but three of the four aren't much younger than Thomas Bjorn, who's captaining in the side. And Garcia's selection was the one that caused most consternation. He's got a great record overall in the Ryder Cup, 19-11-7. And Bjorn probably thought that he was worth his place on not only what he'll do on the golf course, but what he'll bring into the team room. And those are the intangibles, I suppose, when thinking about Ryder Cup selection. It's okay, people on Twitter saying, oh, you should have gone with Matt Wallace over Sergio Garcia. But Thomas Bjorn, he knows how he wants to set his team up with the with the pairings and what players will bring in terms of that dynamic in the team room as well.
I honestly think if he'd picked Matt Wallace, Wallace would have played once, twice maximum before the singles, and then what was all the fuss about?
Yeah,
Sergio could play three times before the singles quite easily, maybe even the lot, possibly not, but I could see him playing four out of five. I noticed in they had their first sort of press conference yesterday, and Thomas Bjorn was quite notably keen to say that Sergio was in a good place mentally. We sometimes think now he's won a major and he's got married and everything, but he's still a bit of a delicate flower who I think needs the arm around the shoulder. So he says, if Sergio's in a good place, that's great. That's when he's at his best. So for him to come in off that top 10 in Portugal, it seems like it was a little gentle event, you know, away in the distance while all the tour championship was happening. But I think that was a massive result for Sergio, just to shut up everyone saying he's out of form.
Yeah,
you know, that was a decent display. That, and I think he's going to have a good Ryder Cup, Sergio. I think he's got that one particularly right. I'd be more worried about Stenson not performing.
Yeah, it will be intriguing to see the pairings for the opening four balls as well, because in past Ryder Cups, I've always looked through the list of players, and it's A with B, C with D, E with F. This is easy. This time around, I'm having difficulty picking out the pairings for those opening four balls, so I can't wait for details to be released.
Is it opening four balls or foursomes?
Four balls.
Definitely.
Yes. Four balls to open up and, foursomes in the afternoon.
Yeah, I think Sergio will go with Rahm.
Do you think so? Because I've heard rumours that Rahm isn't that fond of Sergio, but maybe they're scurrilous rumours that I've heard and there's no basis.
There's something about Spaniards in this event, isn't there, ever since the Seve and Ollie days?
Shall I spin you through some markets on the William Hill website? Because I know we've got deep into this podcast with only mentioning the outright betting, and I think I'm not preempting things when I'm saying that we've neither of us have got a strong confident selection for the outright.
Just to have a quick line on whether the market tells you the winner.
Yep.
Last 10 Ryder Cups, five favourites have won, five favourites have lost.
Okay.
So there's nothing there.
Nothing there. But if you bat the
outsider,
the underdog,
But then there's filters. There's other filters if you break it down home and away.
Yeah.
And actually three of the last four favourites have won, so If you've gone all sort of contrary in recent times, you've done your money.
Home advantage has been a huge factor in this event, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And you mentioned the reason why. Just before we get to the... I'll get to the top American and top European point scorers, because they're always very interesting markets in a few moments. But the course really is the great leveller, isn't it? And it's much more important in my mind than the crowds and the hostility they generate throughout the event. Hazeltine was very much an American setup, a long, wide golf course where the Bombers could thrive, a course set up to play to the strength of the home team and make it very difficult for the Europeans to compete. Le Golf National, host of the Open de France for the best part of 30 years, is a different type of test entirely. It's tight, the rough will be up, there are only a few holes on the property that demand driver, and there are many that are certainly less than driver as well. It'll be cold, it might be windy.
I don't think it'll be cold, though, will it? The forecast is in the
20s. Is it not expected to be cold? No, I thought it might be a bit chilly.
The forecast is surprisingly nice.
Will it be wet there out there?
No.
Okay. Oh, well...
When I looked on the forecast, we're talking here Tuesday, it looked nice. I thought, I don't have to pack my big coat.
Is it a golf course where the power hitters will have that taken away? Is it a course that's tailor-made for the Europeans? That's been the general consensus in the lead-up to the tournament. Is that something that you give any credence to?
I don't know if it's tailor-made for the Europeans, but it's more sort of anti for the Americans. I think it kind of restricts their powers, doesn't it? It kind of makes them club down a bit, so you're not going to get Koepka and DJ. Well, DJ might just ignore it anyway, but obviously, yeah, it's not a course where they can just bombs away. So, and in that sense, I mean, some of the Europeans would like more room off the tee, but as a team, yeah, it does favour the Europeans.
The latest betting for top European player, always a fascinating market. Justin Rose is 4-1 in this market. Rory McIlroy 9-2. John Rahm 7-1. Tommy Fleetwood is 8-1. Francesco Molinari is 9s. Henrik Stenson 10-1, along with Ian Poulter, and it's 12-1 and bigger the remainder.
The first thing there is,
go on,
don't play that market, because if you fancy a European, you've got to back them in the overall point score market. And do you know why?
Go on.
Last 10 Ryder Cups, a European has been overall top scoring 8 out of those 10, and the other two were tied.
Very good.
And I think it's because generally America spreads the talent around. It spreads it kind of, it doesn't give anyone too many games. Whereas with Europe, I don't know, there's more inclination on a European captain to say, you just keep going.
Do do you think that's going to be the case this time around? I'm just interested in the makeup of the European team being slightly different, with the wildcard picks being experienced Ryder Cuppers and those that have qualified on purely a form basis.
I think
maybe it will be more evenly spread than usual. That's what I'm saying.
I think there's two or three Europeans will get all five.
Right, okay.
Whereas I'm not even sure. Like, for the Americans, who... Tiger's not playing five, is he?
You'd be amazed, wouldn't you?
Just physically.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, I just think our European gets inspired. I mean, it's a strong trend that 8 out of 10 times the European has actually been the top overall point scorer. So that's the market I would, and obviously you're getting a bigger price as well, aren't you?
You are indeed. I'll spin you through the top combined point scorer market. In that particular market, it is Justin Rose that heads the betting at 8-1, from DJ at 9s, Brooks Koepka 10-1, Rory McIlroy 10-1, Tiger Woods 10-1, 11-1 Justin Thomas, 14-1, and bigger the rest. I'm going to play in the... I've got to play in the top European and the top USA market in terms of noted bets here.
Yeah.
I like Tommy Fleetwood in the top Euro market.
Right.
At 8-1,
play him in the top overall.
Yeah, he's 16-1 in the top overall market. I suppose the trend breakdown in terms of the places: quarter of the odds 1, 2, and 3 in the top Europeans, and if they do get blown away, you've still got a chance of maybe salvaging something in that particular market. But I do take heed of what you're saying in terms of the overall trend for a European to prevail in that top combined point scorer market. But with Fleetwood, I think with five rookies on the team, it seems likely that one of them could get enough matches to star in this Ryder Cup, as Thomas Peters did a couple of years ago. And my vote definitely goes to Fleetwood in this market. He's just playing some superb golf at the moment, having starred in the playoffs with a tie for 7th at the BMW Championship and played well again in the Tour Championship to finish 11th. And he's shown that he can shine on the big stage as well with a 2nd in the US Open. And I'm always looking for someone who's malleable in terms of partners as well. And it's tough to see him being left out of a foursome session given his ball striking, Fleetwood. And I'd be surprised if they decided to sit him in the opening four balls as well. And you look through his match play record, he won his 2 Eurasia Cup matches alongside Paul Casey and Henrik Stenson earlier in the year. So if they decide to go rookie with established player, I think that that bodes well for Fleetwood. And he could get an outing with Rory McIlroy at some point as well. That's been rumoured. And he's practised in a pod with Ian Poulter this morning. He beat a couple of Americans in the world match play earlier in the year before being knocked out by Poulter. And I just think he looks rock solid at 8-1, Tommy Fleetwood. He'd definitely be my pick in that top European point scorer market.
Yeah, it's obviously he's won this event.
Yep.
He's got a strange record though, hasn't he? Some sort of missed cuts as well.
Lots of missed cuts, quite a few of them when he wasn't at the peak of his powers, I think, also for Fleetwood. Yeah. And it's always been a golf course that you always think, if there's a golf course that suits Fleetwood, Le Golf National is it, isn't it, basically? Ball striker's heaven. And, I reckon Fleetwood's going to have a really solid Ryder Cup. That's my instinct.
I'm going to give you some stats here that will please you,
okay,
having made that bet. One of the big things you'll find this week is everyone is going on about holes 15 to 18 because they are brilliant. It's a brilliant closing stretch. It's like they had the Ryder Cup in mind when they designed them. All risk reward.
It's a great golf course for the Ryder Cup, isn't it? Because it can hold 80,000 people, can't it?
Yeah.
Le Golf National.
Yeah. So this closing stretch 15 to 18, where obviously this is where the matches are won and won and lost, aren't they? You can sort of settle in nicely. The game's going either way up to that point, but then it's over that closing stretch. I think I worked it out. 35% of Ryder Cup games go to the 18th. And then it becomes, I think, maybe down to like 80% go to 16.
Yeah.
That far. So I had a look at players, how they'd performed on 15 to 18.
That's nice.
Yeah, in the last 5 years. And look at this, right? This is, I think, if you can get some sort of angle on this, Tyrrell Hatton and Thorbjørn Olesen, that's me today, they've played that stretch in 14 over par.
Right.
Don't touch them with a barge pole. It's like,
that's great for your hole by hole betting, isn't it, as well in play.
If Thomas Bjorn knows that, you'd be a bit worried, wouldn't you, about putting out players who fold over those closing holes.
That's a very good point. And I think he'll have that data, won't he?
Yeah, well, I hope so. If he's not, if you're listening, Thomas, I'm here.
He definitely will.
Yeah. I did it for the last 5 years. The best, although he's only played it once, but McIlroy has got the best record, -2 over those, but that's done in 1 year.
Yeah.
Joint second is Tommy Fleetwood. So he comes on, he holds it together on those closing holes. Mm. Molinari, Fleetwood, Noren and Justin Thomas all have played that stretch in even par.
Yeah.
Everyone else is fairly similar, but Hatton and Olesen just stand out as they fall apart on those two holes. So that's just worth thinking about. Shall I reveal my top scorer tip here?
Yeah, because you obviously have a lean towards a European in the top combined point scorer market. So, yeah, reveal your tip at this juncture. Yeah.
I think this player is going to have a massive Ryder Cup. Jon Rahm.
Yeah, I can see that.
I think he's going to have a stormer. I really like it that he's bothered to play this course the last 2 years when some of them haven't. I think I'm a bit disappointed by some of the Europeans who didn't come back for it. You look at Rose and Stenson, they've not played there for ages. McIlroy's only played it once.
Yeah.
Jon Rahm thought, right, I'm coming here 10th on debut in 2017, 5th this year. And maybe before that he thought, is this a Jon Rahm course? Because it might catch him out. But he says it's one of his favourite ever courses. He loves the place and he's backed it up with those performances. I looked at his play down the stretch. He did have a problem on 15 this year. He double bogeyed it twice. So, but then it's match play. You lose that hole, okay, you move on.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, the punishment is just the one hole. So you take out that and he's +1 over that stretch, but obviously a lot of the damage was done just on those 2 days. So overall, you'd say plays it well. He makes birdies on some of these closing holes. And I just think we've maybe forgotten about him a little bit because he didn't do a lot in the playoffs, but he sort of got quietly better. He missed the cut Northern Trust, 43rd Dell Technologies, 24th BMW, and then 11th at the Tour Championship, where he was in there, wasn't he? He was up there going into the final day.
Yeah.
And his stats were good, 5th for greens in regulation. I just think he's been waiting for this Ryder Cup. I think he's going to have a monster of a week. So I like him in the...
Do you want him to be paired with Sergio Garcia?
No, I just think it's a possibility. I'd pair him with anybody. I think he's just... He'll just be a monster. And I think there's a chance he'll get 5 games, which obviously what you want, isn't it? More chances.
Well, I think the same with Fleetwood, and that because yeah. I don't see Fleetwood being left out of the morning four balls. You can see him being in that starting eight players, can't you? And then I don't see how you leave Fleetwood out of foursomes.
It's just got... Golf seems a bit ageless sometimes. You think, oh, he's 40 and he's still winning. But in this concentrated spell, I think you can't play the older guys too many times. So someone like Peters last time, young, vibrant, went out there, played all 5, Bush, McIlroy has before. So John Rahm's of that age where they just wheel him out 5 times. And you look at his record when he comes back to Europe, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It really is brilliant. It's like he feels like the big fish, doesn't he, in the smaller pond. And I just really like the fact that he's played this course twice.
You're not concerned about temperament?
I think it's a plus in the Ryder Cup.
Okay.
You look at some of those ones with tempers, I think it goes the right way, like Patrick Reed. I think somehow they play better because of it.
Yeah.
So I think he'll be fired up in a good way.
You've talked me into this, I think, as well.
So he's 18 to 1.
Yeah.
Top overall points scorer. I think he's just off the radar in terms of current form, but it's there. You can see it coming.
Yeah.
He's trending in the right direction. Got the course form. He's Spanish. He's just, everything's there for Rahm.
Let's talk about the top US player then, Dave. Dustin Johnson, 5 to 1, favourite in this market. Brooks Koepka, 11 to 2. Jordan Spieth, 7 to 1, along with Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed and Tiger Woods. Bryson DeChambeau is 10 to 1, along with Ricky Fowler, 14 to 1 and bigger the rest. You mentioned at the top of this preview that you think the Americans likely to spread their number of games out, so to speak. So whereas Europeans more likely to get 5 games, Americans less likely to get 5 games. Is there anyone you think could buck that trend? And have you got a strong, confident selection in this market?
I don't know if I've got a strong selection, but the one, if I was having a bet, would be Justin Thomas.
He's the one I've gone for.
Yeah, because I don't know whether I sort of want to reward him for coming over, actually being bothered to come and play.
I think it's going to be a big factor for Jim Furyk this week.
Yeah.
I mean, if Jim Furyk's thinking who's dedicated to the Ryder Cup, and I think he's got to look at Justin Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't just sort of come over and wave and go to the Eiffel Tower. He finished 8th, so he played it well.
Yep.
That is a big reason, but he's been in good form as well, hasn't he? Won the Bridgestone, 6th at the PGA, 8th at the Northern Trust, 7th at the Tour Championship last week, 5th for greens in regulation. And again, you were saying, like, malleable, there's lots of potential partners for him.
Loads. This is the thing that I like most about Justin Thomas. The reason I'm not going more confident with this bet is he's dealing with a slight wrist issue, isn't he, which has been hindering him slightly. I don't know if it's going to be a big factor, and I'd wait for maybe the press conferences, those teams to be announced on Friday morning as well. But I think if he's fighting fit, I mean, his rise to the top of the game has been astounding, hasn't it? The amount of times he's won in the last 2 years. And it's unbelievable to think he's a rookie, really.
Yeah.
But he was unbeaten in the President's Cup last year, played alongside Ricky Fowler. You can see that partnership again, and Daniel Berger in one game. Fowler's overcome his oblique injury. He's in decent form at the moment. So they could form a formidable partnership this week as well. And he reached the semi-final of the World Match Play.
Yeah.
I think Match Play is Justin Thomas's game. And in addition to that, I could see him getting an outing with Tiger Woods, who's his regular practice partner as well. Only member of the team to have played the course, which obviously is a huge positive. And he's got the perfect personality to be a dominant force, I think, this Ryder Cup. And I thought 7 to 1, I can see him playing all 5 matches, Justin Thomas. And I thought it was a nice price.
He could win that with maybe 3 points, 3.5 points.
Yep.
Yeah, it'd be it's definitely the one for me. I don't really know who else. Deschambo might go well, but you can't. I'm not sure.
I don't think he'll play all.
Yeah.
I can see him being rested when Woods maybe gets a rest.
Yeah.
Woods and Deschambo will go out probably in the morning four balls, won't they?
Yeah.
You would think.
But there's quite a few you don't like in that market, like Mickelson, Bubba.
Yeah.
DJ, I'm not sure on.
No, I'm not sure the course is tailor-made for Brooks Koepka either.
No. I did wonder if Finau might be better than his odds suggest. Maybe you could play him in top wild card 4-1. I think Tiger will have a good week though, so
yeah,
it's tricky, isn't it? But
he was
top
just,
rookie,
he,
maybe
he was just so good last week, wasn't he, Tiger
yeah.
Woods?
It's almost like he might play three times and win 3 out of 3 that kind of week.
Yeah.
I think Finau, because Finau was one of the ones, although he didn't play it, he went on a recce, didn't he? Some of them went and played it near open week, and Finau was one of them. So I think that must have gone down well with Jim Furyk. So and he just plays well everywhere, doesn't he, really, Finau?
Yeah, he's just he's consistent, isn't he?
Yeah.
I think that's what you want as well. I mean, there was debate whether Xander Schauffele should have gone in Tony Finau's place, but I think if anyone was going to go in at anyone's place, it would be Phil Mickelson being left at home and Xander Schauffele maybe making the trip out.
Yeah.
I wonder if Furyk could change... He wouldn't, would he? I don't think. But if Furyk could change his mind right now, would he still take Phil Mickelson?
Probably, because he's thinking as well behind the scenes. We just sometimes think, look at how they're going to perform on out there on the pitch kind of thing.
But yeah.
He knows from being on so many teams what he brings to behind the scenes. You can't really put a price on that kind of stuff, can you?
No.
It's like the X factor.
Obviously, there's a whole host of markets on the William Hill website. We've only talked through the outright, in which neither of us got a strong selection. You've gone to top combined point score. We've talked about top American, top European. But there must be, there's 50-odd markets on the William Hill website. Hashtag your odds as well. So if there's a bet that you like the look of that's not priced up, do tweet using the hashtag your odds to @WilliamHill and the traders will price it up. And we got an offer as well on this week for the Ryder Cup. If you bet £10 on the top combined point score, you like this, bet £10 on the top combined point scorer, minimum of £10, get a £5 free bet every time they win a match.
Oh.
So there you go. That's something
John
for you
Rahm,
to get involved with.
Mm.
Yeah, £5 free bet every time they win a match.
Very good.
Any other markets that you want to talk about?
So we're both sort of dodging the outright, are we? Was that what we're saying?
Yeah, I think so. I was a fortnight ago, I thought I'd be sitting here saying the Americans are certainties.
Yeah.
But just that tailing off of recent form of a few key members has tempered my enthusiasm. So yeah, I'm steering clear of the outright.
Well, I found a way to... I'm going there. I don't know if I've said that yet, but I am going there.
Yeah, we've not talked about that, have we?
I don't want to be... I do. I know some people don't really get into who wins and, you know, whoever they put their money on, they want to win. I want Europe to win. I think it's great. I get caught up in it. This is where you're separating it a bit from betting. I want them to win, so I don't want part of me cheering on America because I've got a few quid on them.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I'm not even confident about America winning. I genuinely don't know. It could go either way.
Yep.
So I think the bet you can have, if you're kind of pro-European, it's in the enhanced odds, 4-1 that Europe win by 1 to 3 points.
I looked at that market as well, actually.
I can't see it being a big win. So you're getting 4-1. You can play a reduced stake.
Well, we've had a history of these. I know the last two editions have been blowouts. But before that, we had a history of these ending 14.5, 13.5.
Exactly,
half,
yeah. And then you've got 15.5, 12.5,
yeah.
15, 13 going for you as well. So I think it's quite a nice way of, you don't have to commit. Because if you're backing them at 5-4, there's not a lot. You've got to put a bit on, haven't you? Where this at 4-1, you can have a bit on and have other bets elsewhere and not use up too much of your staking plan.
Yeah, I like it.
So yeah, 4-1 Europe, partly from the heart, to be honest, though.
Yeah. Okay. Should we recap bets then?
Yeah.
I'm going a point each way on both mine. I'm going Tommy Fleetwood in the top European market, but I take on board what you were saying about the top combined points scorer. He's 8-1 in that market. And a point each way on Justin Thomas at 7-1 to be the top American. We've got to this point and we've not mentioned Patrick Reed and Ian Poulter either, have we, really? Yeah. Captain America and the Postman, who are sure to feature heavily for these 3 days. Patrick Reed and Spieth is a combination that I might be looking to take on if they're paired together in the foursomes in particular.
Yeah, well, Reed's won it top American last 2 times.
Yep.
But he's won his form's a bit of a concern, isn't it?
Definitely, I think so. 7-1 he is to be top American to win it for the third consecutive occasion.
Ian Poulter won it 3 times, 08, 10 and 12. So, but can he keep doing it?
Well, I've said this in the last 2 editions of this podcast that there's regression to the mean with Poulter, and he can't keep performing above his actual ability, and I'd suggest that's going to happen again.
But it does throw up the same winners. I mean, Monty won it 97-2002.
Yeah.
Shared it in 99. Garcia won it, or shared it in 1999. Shared it in 2004. Shared it in 2006. So he's... You know, so it's the same winners. You could certainly argue Justin Rose, who was the top point scorer in 2014. You could argue him.
Yeah.
But I will go on John Rahm.
Yeah.
18-1, point and a half each way, top overall point scorer.
And that's your best bet?
That's my best
only
bet of the
bet.
Week.
And then you're having a few quid on that. You're up to win by 1 to 3 points.
I'll have a point on that as well, yeah. Then that covers if Rahm doesn't come in. Justin Thomas, I'll...
Sentimentality there.
A little bit. Justin Thomas, I'll sort of leave you to have that bet, but I'm fully behind you.
Dave, enjoy your trip to France. That should be a special, special week. I know you'll be doing some work for us while you're out there as well.
Yep.
So look forward to seeing you on our screens throughout those 3 days.
Croaking away.
There you go. You can follow Dave on Twitter as well. I'm sure you'll be putting some lovely pictures. Yeah, you'll be doing some tweeting from out there, won't you? Any insight on those pairings as well? talk to me first. At Dave Tindall Golf is the Twitter handle for Dave. My Twitter handle is at D Kellner. Check out the William Hill website. A whole range of markets on the Ryder Cup 2018. We've just been through a few of them. It is hashtag your odds. Tweet at William Hill if there's a bet that you like that's not on the website or on the app. And don't forget about that promotion as well. If you bet £10 or more on the top combined point scorer, you get a £5 free bet every time they win a match.
That's where I'm going now.
Which is nice. Yeah. You can have John Rahm at 18-1 on that particular promotion. Thank you everyone for tuning in and listening. Enjoy your betting week on the Ryder Cup 2018, and myself and Dave will be back next week. Check out all the betting on the website, and good luck.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.